I think what's important to start with is that I did not plan to have children. I had purposely planned not to have children. And then I met my children's father and wanted to have children. He did not say, let's have babies. I just had this really strong maternal instinct, which totally shocked me and surprised me. I am a teacher by profession, and I've always worked with children between the ages of 5 to 12 for the most part. I mean, I've taught other ages, but that's been my specialty. So I loved children, and I used to joke that I'd like to send them home at the end of the day. So when all of a sudden I was so enamored by my children's father and how he interacted with his younger cousins, I all of a sudden had this maternal instinct, and I was in that late 20 stage when I know, you know, evolutionary hormones start kicking in, and I'm pretty sure that was part of, in hindsight, of what was going on as well. So we married in 1990 with the plan to someday have children, but we weren't in a hurry. He's younger than I am by 7 years, so we were in different stages of our lives. So after about a year and a half, I decided to go off of my birth control pills, and I was told that it would take a while for my body to adjust, and that, you know, I should eventually use other birth control, but not to think too much about it in that first week to month. Well, I get pregnant the first time after not taking a pill for a day or two.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't, and how I discovered that I was pregnant is I had a dream. I had a dream that I was pregnant, which was pretty amazing to have because I'd never had a truth-telling dream that I was aware of in my past. But I knew after this dream that I was pregnant. And so I woke up and I told my husband. And at this point, we had been married less than 2 years, and he was still 7 years younger than I and not quite ready for this. And so he said, no, you're not. And I said, I am. I just had the dream. I know I am. So, you know, we did all the testing and confirmed that indeed I was pregnant. And we were both pretty shocked. And yet at the same time, it was part of our long-term plan. So we just said, okay, well, that's happening a little earlier than we planned. And, you know, we were excited and grateful. I hadn't grown up with a lot of knowledge about pregnancy. I hadn't, until that point, really read about it because I was still in my professional life and not planning yet to have children. I had stopped my full-time job because it was quite stressful, and had started my home business working with homeschoolers and piano students. So I was already working my own hours and now running to the bathroom to throw up occasionally. That was one of the other signs. That didn't last for very long. I've heard some really sad stories about that continuing a long time, but it did happen for me. Overall, I would say I had a really easy pregnancy compared to other people I talked to, meaning I liked being pregnant except for the nausea at the beginning. I felt good. I felt better than I'd felt in a long time. And I think for me, growing a child and not menstruating is a happy place for my body. And that was confirmed the second time around as well, that my body liked being pregnant. And I had often thought, oh, maybe it's kind of sad that I waited till my 30s because I like this. But that was the reality.
Mm-hmm.
I already knew I wanted to work with midwives, though my sister's 2 years younger. She had worked with midwives. I had been working at a Waldorf Rudolf Steiner school, and had learned a lot about natural birth, read the very popular Mothering magazine at the time quite a bit. And so I started working with a group called Midwives Care, which was a mix of nurse midwives and lay midwives. It so happened that one of those midwives had been at my sister's second birth. But I wouldn't have known that yet. So I became close to this one midwife, and actually the two lay midwives I felt I related to the most. We had a lot of things in common in our lives, music and nature and an interest in the way we lived. And so I wanted a home birth. I knew that my sister had already had one home birth, and I talked to a lot of people, both students that I had through the homeschooling group and the Waldorf school. I talked to a lot of people who had had home births. And so I felt confident. I started going to Lily Che League meetings, and I was already hanging out with homeschoolers who had multiple children and were homeschooling. They weren't religious. It was a non-religious group. There's another word. And
Secular. There you go.
So I learned a lot in 9 months about pregnancy and nursing and parenting that I hadn't thought about because I hadn't planned to have a child yet and had spent most of my life planning not to. So I spent that 9 months learning a lot, and my husband and I had befriended a couple who the woman was actually in the process of writing a book on parenting, and they had 2 young children, and we went to their house almost every Friday night throughout that first pregnancy. So for almost every night for 9 months, we were there every Friday having dinner with this couple and their 2 young children. They were both, 6 and under, and, watched the different parenting styles and rituals of bedtime and mealtime. And it was a really beautiful way to learn about parenting options that I hadn't grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. It was a great gift. And unfortunately, they moved a few weeks before my birth. So it was like, all of a sudden.
Oh, no.
I know. It was really hard timing for me. But one of them got a job and they were gone real kind of quickly and weren't as available afterwards. However, I still had the homeschool group, and I'll talk about the birth, but after the birth, they all brought me food and came and visited and sang with me and my baby and told stories about their own births and babies. And so I had this really lovely community of homeschoolers and Lily Che League people. And I was about 2 hours from my mother and sister. So I saw them maybe once a month, but I had this community of people. Like-minded people, which was really, really fabulous. The birth itself was very interesting. The nesting instinct just really kicked in about 48 hours before my daughter was born. And all of a sudden, I was waddling around the house. It was August. It was hot. I did not have air conditioning. And I was very sticky and just rearranging all the furniture and you know, it was just this crazy, you know, it was like, why are you doing this? I don't know. I just, you know. But it was very instinctual, and I had to move certain things to certain places. And that was really important. And the night before my daughter was born, my midwife said, I'm coming to Cincinnati to hang out with some friends. Let's do an appointment at your house. Make sure the house is ready. And so she checked my body out and said, you know, I wasn't dilated or anything. And she said, you know, it'll probably be in the next week or two. And we said our goodbye, you know, checked the house and said our goodbyes. And then at 4:44, within 12 hours after she was there, I felt a huge kick. And I should say my daughter was not an active baby, and she's still not a physically mm-hmm. active person. So I never understood what people were talking about with lots of kicks and things. But all of a sudden I got the kick. And I knew from my mother that women in my family's water often broke as the first sign of labor beginning. So I very quickly mm-hmm. slid off the bed, and it was a good thing I did, because she had indeed broke the waters.
Wow.
And so that was the beginning, and I'll never forget looking over at the clock and saying it's 4:44 and waking up my husband. And so we called the midwife. Now, part of the story I didn't tell you was that in 1992, there was a lot of worry about beta strep. If it was vaginally in mothers and the waters broke first. So when I called my midwife, who was still in Cincinnati, even though she didn't live there because she'd spent the night with her friend, her weekend plan, she's like, I just checked you. I'm like, I know. But she's, you know, laughed, and she said, well, baby's coming to come. And
that's right.
She said, well, you know, now we need to go to the hospital. I had already taken several rounds of antibiotics, which I was promised wouldn't affect me, wouldn't affect my daughter. And I'm not sure that's really was really the case, because we both had and have had some serious health issues since that time. But I'll never know for sure. What, you know, the chicken and what caused what. So I went to the hospital and we were timing my contractions from 4:44 on. And I don't remember those details, you know, it was almost 31 years ago. But I can tell you that they were happening. And, you know, my young husband was very nervous driving me. We had quite a drive, 25 or 30 minutes, and then having to deal with the Cincinnati hospital and stuff. But it was early in the morning on a Sunday. Yeah, it was Sunday. So there wasn't a lot of traffic, but just parking issues. And then getting inside, and, you know, we hadn't planned to be there, so we had to sign in as if we were an emergency patient. And so we had to go through all that, and if you can imagine, by the time we got through the admissions process, my labor had completely stopped. I was concerned about being in the hospital. That wasn't a place that I considered my optimum choice for childbirth. My midwife hadn't yet arrived, and she was concerned about coming to the hospital because she was a lay midwife. And she was working to get one of the nurse midwives to come to the hospital. But for whatever reason, they couldn't be reached. Well, it was early in the morning. That could have been the reason. We all didn't have cell phones. So. And so she arrived and said she was my midwife. And we just didn't talk about labels and legalities. And they showed her up to the room. And after I relaxed enough, the labor started back up. And they, at mm-hmm. some point, oh, because of the beta strep, I had been put into bed with an IV. I had not mm-hmm. been birthed in a bed. I realized there was a better position, you know, for a baby to come out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
I went standing, squatting, sitting in a birthing chair. So once I got in the bed and hooked into the machines, my back labor started in, and I couldn't, it was so intense, I couldn't get out of the bed. And this mm-hmm. is where I went from having a great pregnancy and birthing experience to all of a sudden it being not very pleasant. And I'd heard the term back labor, but I didn't have an understanding of how intense it could be. And I couldn't relax enough in between contractions to sit up. And I don't know why, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have a video of this to watch. I can say that we had ocean music playing. That was part of the plan, which is interesting mm-hmm. because I've just spent 2 months at the ocean and realized this is why I had the ocean music, because it's in my Sicilian maternal genes. And mm-hmm. the water mm-hmm. is a natural sound that was heard in the town where my ancestors came from on the Aeolian Sea. And I had no idea that this is why I needed to listen to ocean music, but I did 31 years ago without having ever visited the ocean.
Mm-hmm. How beautiful.
I know. So the back labor went on for about 2 hours, and then finally mm-hmm. I was able to lift up enough that there was a better angle for my body, and my daughter was able to move down further enough that she could pop out. And I remember looking up and there was the clock and it was 12:17. And I looked at the clock, most important times for that.
Yeah.
They just were right there. And she was immediately brought to my breast by the midwife, and the midwife caught the baby. And so I'm nursing. I should say one very awkward thing happened during the birth. I mentioned that a doctor, the official doctor, arrived at one time. I'd only met him once, you know, like, hi, I'm the doctor, just in case anything happens. And it never does. Mm-hmm. So we probably won't see each other again. That kind of or seldom does. And mm-hmm. so when he came in, he was talking to another attending physician or resident or something about golf scores and different sports things. And my mama lion woke up in a way I didn't even know it was in me. And I told him if he was going to talk sports scores, to leave the room because I was having a beauty.
Good for you.
And I was quite embarrassed about that when it happened and afterwards, but it was also like it was so inappropriate. And so he left the room and it was just a nurse from the hospital and my midwife. And maybe at the last second, one of the nurse midwives arrived. I really can't even remember if they ever did or not. So my baby was born. I nursed her right away. We kept them from bathing her and let all the lovely natural elements stay with her for as long as possible. Within an hour or two, she was singing, and I wished I was one of those people who had a video camera at the time, because she sang almost nonstop for the first couple days, and it was quite amazing. And she's still quite a hummer and a singer. And so that was a really special thing. We were required to stay at the hospital for several days because of the beta strep, and we were both constantly tested and drugged. But I think after about 3 days, we were able to go home, and she did room with me, and that was all quite lovely. And her father was able to stay in the room. And we hadn't planned a name for her, but the moment she was born, I named her, which I'm choosing not to share per her request. But it was interesting. You know, we had this list of names for boys and girls, and we didn't know what gender. We had chosen not to find out. But I immediately knew her name and said, her name is blah, blah, blah. And Dad looked at me and said, oh, is
it? Oh, really?
I just knew.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So we were happy for about 3 weeks, and then colic set in, and that was really intense, and it went on for a very, very long time. And it put a lot of pressure on the marriage, and everybody said, oh, marriage is hard when you have a new baby, but I don't think anybody knew how hard it was. And in hindsight, I think we needed a lot more support than we were getting, because nobody knew. I mean, maybe it's just hard for everybody, but I can say we didn't get enough support as individual humans. And I don't know if you can help a colicky baby, or you just have to live through it, but it was a really, really hard time, and very, very stressful. Then she started teething around 3 months on top of the colic.
Just rolled from one right into the next.
But I loved nursing, and I sang to my daughter constantly, and we danced to George Winston music, which she still listens to, and we were outside. I carried her constantly, either in my arms or in a pack, until I became extremely arthritic within 3 to 6 months after her birth, and I couldn't even pick her up. So I was pushing a baby carriage through the house, and so this is the autoimmune or genetic stuff that kicked in, which she's now dealing with as well. At 30, and so I eventually stopped eating nightshades, which helped reduce the inflammation enough that I could carry her again, and stopped eating gluten and dairy. So there was all of that going on too, because her digestion was a mess, my body was a mess, and it was challenging, and nobody knew how to help us. But she was a really big, round, fat Buddha baby. And one doctor, that was rather rude, said, wow, you're quite the heifer.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The things people say.
I know. Man,
come on.
I guess heifers have a high fat content. And that was what he meant by But yeah, it was a really weird thing.
I'm not sure that makes it better, but
it was a really weird
I don't know thing. That justifies the comment, but
so
yeah.
In general, I can say I loved being pregnant. I loved that the pregnancy started with a dream. I felt that was quite a gift. I have always been very close to my daughter, and I'm actually visiting her right now, and I loved being a mom. It's not always easy, but I loved it. Two things that I didn't mention about the pregnancy that seem important. One is that early in the pregnancy, my husband had gone to hear John Robbins speak, who was the son of the big Baskin and Robbins ice cream people, who was a big vegan. And he came home and convinced me that we should be vegans. And this was something a lot of people I knew at the time were doing. So without a lot of conversation with women, I switched to being a vegan during my pregnancy. I do not think in hindsight that was healthy for me or my child. I've suffered a lot of anemia. I think because of it, I'm no longer a vegan and haven't been for some time, but it took me a long time to recover. And I think I was already on the edge of anemia, but I didn't understand the consequences for my family and genetics surrounding anemia. So that may have also made me weaker, or some of those other health issues to kind of creep in. And I did occasionally crave meat, and I wish I had listened to those cravings. I didn't understand how important it was at the time to do that. I regret that even more because my daughters continue to be vegetarians, and I see it's also affecting their health. At least I believe it is, from an anemic energy point of view. I'm much healthier.
Interesting.
Now that I'm eating animal products regularly. The second thing I wanted to mention is that depression, anxiety run in my family, and I wouldn't have had those words to use in 1992. I did a lot of writing and journaling during my pregnancy, which unfortunately the ink I chose at the time faded, and I am not able to go back and read all those things I wrote about my pregnancy. And I recorded so many things about being a new mother that I wanted to share with my daughter someday, and all of that disappeared. But why am I telling you this?
Oh my gosh.
There was this anxiety and depression and this judging of the right and the wrong. Is it okay to nurse? Because my mother didn't nurse us and she was uncomfortable. Was it okay to let your baby wear shoes, or was it better to go barefoot? And there were all of these very strong opinions about what's proper and improper. Not that I grew up in a family of wealth, but just a family of opinions of people who were trying to fit in. So there was still the Sicilian immigrant, we have to fit into society. We can't show that we're other. We need to show that we have money. We need to put shoes on our children. We need to bottle feed them and be modern and do these different things. So there was a lot of pressure for both my sister and I, but somehow I think it was harder on me because I tended to be the more melancholy of the two of us sisters. To make my own choices and to do something different. I also preferred fewer toys and objects in the household, and so there were lots of conflicts of how to be a mom, and that caused even more depression and anxiety and a separation between my mother and I at a time when I could have really used her support. And one of the things that I had wanted to tell you is her story of my birth and conception is very different than mine, and it seems important and a big part of what I left out. So I shared first the light, and this is the shadow. My mother did not know the origin of babies when she got married. She still believed that the Stork and or the Sears catalog had something to do with babies, and she did not know about sexuality. My father grew up on a farm, was the youngest of five boys, and he, according to my mother, she told me this a few years before she died, he raped her constantly throughout the first night after their marriage. That was my conception.
What a difficult place for all of you to have started from.
Exactly. I got the impression that he's not aware of his role in that situation. And I don't know how much she actually spoke to him about it or not, but I do know that she was a victim of abuse, possibly family members or priests. I'm not sure. I do know that my family left the church after a certain time in her life, and she went from a Catholic school to a Protestant school. There was always silence around that. So, so when, after my birth experience, I started having odd memories of abuse, but I had no memory of abuse, and I still, 31 years later, don't have any memory of sexual abuse. Now, okay, I need to pause that because I said something that's not completely true. The father of my children is my second husband. I was married for 2 years in my early 20s. To a man who started physically abusing me within 24 hours of our marriage, who had never hit me or raised his voice to me before. I thought went from princess to an abusive situation. I literally escaped that marriage and ran away and went into hiding. He was a police officer. You don't need to hear the details of how scary it was. So I did have that history of abuse, but I didn't have the history of sexual abuse because, oddly, his abuse was not sexual. In fact, it was the opposite. It was like, this is how you keep a woman, keep her sexually happy, but you abuse. It was crazy, really crazy. So after my baby was born, I started having these sexual abuse memories, which didn't make sense to my personal history. 4 or 5 years later, I brought this up to my mother. Okay, it wasn't that long. It was 3 years later. It was while I was pregnant with my second daughter. My mother went into a coma within a week after we had that conversation. I'm like, this is the shadow.
No, I just wasn't
around the birth in my family. And I had planned to interweave it with a positive, but it just didn't feel right to do. And then afterwards, I'm like, wait a minute. I left out half of the story. So
Yeah, I mean, these are huge things for you to be carrying forward into your own experiences.
Right. And some of them I've shared with my daughters, and some they only know partial details. So when I tell you more about my second daughter's birth, I want to be sure to include, because she was 2 weeks old when my mother went into her coma. So there are these stories of abuse, and I'm just back from a trip to Sicily where I went to do family research, and I learned that my maternal family of origin lived in such poverty that they actually gave the parents didn't marry, even though they had multiple children, and they gave their children to the orphanage. And then like 25 years later, married and reclaimed their children. It's lots of tragedy.
It's unbelievable. You know,
the person who helped me do this research read and said the babies were wrapped in rags. And I just started crying.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know how far down the line abuse happens, but I know enough to not be naive to know that many women don't choose pregnancy, whether they're married or not, and that I may be the first person in my maternal line to have chosen to be a mother and to have chosen pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And to have enjoyed parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've put together pieces of that while I was in Sicily. And although I don't know, of course, all the history, because there aren't a lot of records about very poor people, but I was able to find little bits, you know, and
mm-hmm.
including what I already knew, that my great-grandmother was married off at the age of 13 to a man 10 years her senior, and she started having babies within the year, and that couldn't have been welcomed by her. I knew my great-grandmother.
No.
So she was born in Sicily. And so this memory of abuse, was it my mother's, my grandmother's, my great-grandmother's? How cellular is it? I don't know. This is something I haven't shared with my daughters yet, but I want to. I know at least one of them is planning to have children in the near future. And I'd rather talk to her about it before she moves into the pregnancy stage.
I can understand that.
So this was another complication on top of all of the health issues going on and the underlying anxiety and depression, which were probably made worse by the diet, made worse by the multiple rounds of antibiotics, which were supposed to be fine and healthy, but I've learned in my life and in my daughter's life that we almost always get sicker from them than we heal from them. And this is something that we're looking into, some genetic testing of particular diseases that are not super rare, but rare enough that they're still not being diagnosed for most people. And one of the symptoms is actually the water breaks first. I had mentioned that I felt really good being pregnant in both of my pregnancies, and I loved being pregnant. I just still have delightful memories of how good my body felt. And one of the reasons is because I did bleed extremely heavily, which did cause ongoing anemia. And it ended up I had fibroids, and endometriosis wow. and adenomyosis. So I guess it's been about 6 years now. I finally had a hysterectomy in my late 50s because I was starting to need blood transfusions. I had probably needed them for over a decade. But, you know, everybody said, oh, you'll feel great afterwards. And I didn't. So that's when we had to start looking at what else is going on. And, you know, so it was so easy for everybody to say, oh, well, you're just anemic, you know, take iron and you'll be fine. But my body didn't tolerate the iron. So all of this, I think, is important in women's health. And that's why I'm bringing it up, because of the birthing and pregnancy, because I want other women who may experience this to know about these things. And of course, it's not my story to tell, but all of this and my husband's trauma also affected him, you know, and that's a whole different story. And so it becomes very complex and challenging. And yet at the same time, we really loved being parents, despite all the challenges.
I think that is a piece of these stories that is so true, that you can be grateful for your children and grateful for the opportunity to have them, and in awe of the experience of being a parent. And also, it can be really difficult. All of those things can be true at the same time.
Definitely.